ka aha inahe kuliana imu o kea aha ho o kolokolo ki ike hanahano o ka moku aina o Hawaii. E nai mai, e malio mai, I lohi ia ka leo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, all persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court, State of Hawaii, draw nigh, give your attention, and you shall be heard.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC-23-000757. Nordic PCL Construction, Inc., formerly known as Nordic Construction LTD, petitioner, claimant, counterclaim respondent, appellee, versus LPIHGC, LLC, respondent, counterclaimant, appellant. Arguing for petitioner, Nordic PCL Construction, Inc., David Schulmeister. Arguing for respondent, LPIHGC, LLC, Terrence O'Toole. Argument on the merits.
Good morning and aloha, everyone. Today's proceeding is being broadcast live on the Judiciary's YouTube channel as well as on Olelo. I'd like to welcome our substitute justices, Judges Kirsten Hammond and Stephen Nichols. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, we are.
Yes, thank you. The court has allowed 30 minutes for each side. Just to confirm, Mr. Schulmeister, you will have 20 minutes with 10 minutes reserved for rebuttal. And Mr. O'Toole, you will have 30 minutes with a 1 minute warning. Mr. Schulmeister, please proceed.
Can you hear me? I'm good, okay. Nordic believes that there are essentially two problems with ICA's sua sponte dismissal of LPI's appeal as untimely. As to the first problem, Nordic and LPI both agree that the ICA erred by deeming Judge Crabtree's cost award as final back in 2017. Which was before the second arbitration occurred. Additionally, in addition to this problem, Nordic believes that ICA should not have left Nordic's motion to consolidate unruled upon. And I'll come back to that, but prior to the court, the ICA issuing the dismissal order, Nordic had filed a motion to consolidate, because there's actually three related appeals that all relate to the same dispute in the same arbitration. Now, as to the first problem, Nordic and LPI both assumed that the judgment in the second special proceeding, which is not directly in the line of this case, it's one of the three related cases. But Nordic and LPI both assumed that when Judge Tanaki entered the final judgment in that case, before that one went up on appeal, that provided the necessary finality for the cost award, because at that point, there was a judgment following the remand. And this appeal actually was fully briefed by both parties, both LPI and Nordic, on the assumption that there was jurisdiction, because once the judgment in the second special proceeding was filed, then that made the cost award ripe for appeal. Now, the ICA then flagged what they saw was a problem, relying upon a judgment in one circuit court proceeding being entered to render an order in a different proceeding final, right? Because that's essentially what was going on here, right? And so what happened was Judge Hirooka issued an order to show cause in which he asked the parties to weigh in on that. So I think, you know, again, on this first point, I think both LPI and Nordic saw the second proceeding as being effectively a sort of continuation of the first one, even though LPI initiated a second proceeding with its own motion to confirm. that had its own SP number. Now, but the two proceedings are more than simply related. The second is really a continuation of the first.
Mr. Schulmeister, Justice Ginoza has a question.
Before you go further into that, Mr. Schulmeister, my question is, I know LPI, after the second arbitration award, filed their motion to confirm in a separate special proceeding, not the original special proceeding, which was ending in 3-4-6, but a second one was filed. At that juncture, would your client have had any concern if it had been filed, the motion to confirm the second arbitration award had been filed in the original SP proceeding?
No, and in fact, that was what we were expecting.
I just want to make sure there isn't something we're missing as to what the parties felt were concerns or issues in filing it in the original proceeding. And I know you're not the one who filed it, but I wanted to make sure from your side of the perspective.
No, and actually, not only do we not see a problem, but we think the fact that it was filed in a separate proceeding has actually created problems. And that's what I was going to get into. In fact, it would have been much better and simpler for everyone. Because if the motion to confirm and then our responsive motion to vacate was in the first proceeding, then there would have been no question that the judgment that the Tanaki entered would have triggered finality for anything that went before. And then we wouldn't have this problem. So not only do I not have a would not have had a concern with it having been filed in the first proceeding, I think it should have been filed there. And that one way or another, before this, all these related cases are resolved, there's got to be a way to fix that by, you know, somehow recognizing second proceeding is not really, I mean, it's actually a continuation of the first. I mean, other than having a different number. So it's just kind of more of an administrative thing. So on this first decision point, in our view, the first decision point here is whether the existence of two separate SP numbers precludes the cost award in the first proceeding from being deemed final as a result of the judgment in the second proceeding. That's the first decision point. If the answer is no, in other words, if the court agrees that with the sort of implicit assumption that both NORC and LPI had made, that, you know, there really is a continuation of the same matter, even though it's two different numbers, and so the judgment could have that effect, then the dismissal order should be vacated, and the case should proceed to a decision on the merits being whether or not Judge Crabtree's order itself had a problem, because those merits haven't been reached yet. If the answer is yes, in other words, if it is a problem that there's two special proceeding numbers and you can't, and if the court does not believe that you can have the Tanaki judgment in effect make the Crabtree judgment final, then the case needs to be remanded with instructions as to how to remedy this lack of finality. And as to all of this that I said so far, I believe that NORC and LBI are in agreement. So now I'd like to talk about the second problem. The second problem being that the ICA never ruled on NORC's motion to consolidate. Now, like I said, there's three separate proceedings. So the timeline here is there's two. Judge Tanaki's order confirming in the second award was appealed by NORC. And then LPI appealed Judge Crabtree's cost order in connection with the first arbitration, vacation. What LPI has suggested is that if the court vacates and asks the ICA to fix the finality problem, or ICA or the circuit court to fix the finality problem, then, you know, I think that they've argued there should be a temporary remand so that a quote-unquote judgment can be entered. Nordic has a slightly different view of than LPI about whether that makes sense or is appropriate. The problem is that as long as we have a situation where these two separate special proceedings have not been consolidated, either at the circuit court level or at the appellate level, or maybe, I don't know, potentially someday it might happen at the Supreme Court level, because the other, because the ICA has ruled in the other appeal, but it has entered a judgment on it, and that one is going to be the subject of another application for a writ of cert. So in the next few months, NORIC will be challenging that. But in the meantime, the problem is that when NORIC filed its motion to consolidate, the ICA did not have a panel. It hadn't been filed that there's any panel assigned for the appeal that was dismissed as the subject of this cert petition. So what happened was, in the other appeal, there was a sua sponte consolidation with yet another case, which is the one that where Judge Ochiai had entered a ruling that was related to the bond, what's called the bond appeal. And so Nordic was hopeful that if the ICA had ruled on the motion to consolidate before a panel had been assigned, there's still a chance to get one panel to decide all three appeals. But what happened was subsequently, the without ever announcing a panel, they just dismissed, and with a panel that was different from the panel that just decided the other appeal. So now we've got, not only do we have two SP numbers, but we have two different ICA appeals, and not only different appeals, but they also have different panels. So, so getting back to, all right, if... So
Mr.
if,
Schallmeister, I have a question.
Yes.
So it is Nordic's position that a consolidation of the appeals would, the final judgment in the other proceeding, the second confirmation, would apply if the all three cases were consolidated. Is that right?
Well, I would say yes, but let me just clarify, because I mean, this is the position that we're advocating. I mean, what we want, what we'd like is, and we have to fix the problem somehow. I mean, consolidation seems to be the only sort of conventional procedural mechanism that we could think of. But like I said before, I mean, these are more than just two related cases. One is really a continuation of the other. So apart from just an order of consolidating, which, you know, this could have happened at the circuit court level. It could have happened at the ICA level if they had ruled on the motion, you know, before, you know, signing to a different panel and dismissing. Or if this matter is still pending at the time we file our cert petition in the other one, then, potentially it would all be here if the court were accepted.
All right, Mr. Schallmeister, Justice Edens has a question.
Is there anything wrong with temporarily remanding to the circuit court to enter a final judgment in that first special proceeding, and after that, then bringing it back to the ICA to address the costs consistent with that memorandum opinion they issued in March 2025?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But what I would like to add, though, is if that is the process that's used, which I think that is a viable way to go, so I don't see a problem with it. But if that were to be done without addressing the problem of there being two separate special proceedings and two separate appeals, I think you're still going to have that problem. So it seems clear. It seems to Nordic anyway that sooner or later, this thing has to be recognized as being one continuous proceeding. So if the court is going to enter a judgment to make it final, that's fine. But why not at the same time instruct the court to consolidate the two, or to instruct the ICA to consolidate, you know, at some point, or to at least recognize it as really one proceeding? So that's. I mean, I realize that we don't have like really clear guidance here from rules and cases on this, I think that, but I don't think there's a problem. I mean, I think I would say a safe procedure would be to do just as you suggested, but that still leaves this other problem of there being two separate proceedings. And now there's inconsistent results because the way it sits right now, the ICA in the other appeal has ruled that Norick's action to enforce the bond has become moot because there's no debt secured by the bond. But in this appeal, the ICA ruled that the cost order was essentially a final judgment, and which hasn't, you know, but that hasn't been satisfied. So it cannot both be true that the action to enforce the cost award against the bond is moot if it was actually a judgment that can't be challenged now.
And to follow up, I mean, it seems clear, at least to me, that there would have to be a remand for final judgment, because if the ICA simply just had consolidated the cases or even did so now, I mean, it would seem LPI would still be out of luck because there wouldn't be a final judgment there. Am I correct in that assessment that wouldn't necessarily cure the defect, a consolidation without temporary remand?
I think I agree with that.
Thank you.
So, you know, I think that's kind of it in a nutshell. You know, what the court has to deal with here is if there's going to be a remand, what will the instructions be? And of course, if there's I think there would have to probably be a remand in either to address the merits if the court finds that the original appeal was jurisdictional, or to fix it by remanding to the circuit court, or this court could remand to the circuit court directly, wouldn't have to go to the ICA. You know, I don't think I have anything further on my opening unless there's a question, and I'd be happy to reserve the balance.
There are not appearing to be any questions. We will now hear from Mr. O'Toole. Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Can everybody hear me okay? Thank you. I want to start back, if I could, on what I think are the issues before the court. And my argument will be, unless there's a lot of questions, will be considerably shorter. I think that there are two issues. The first issue to me is the ICA's decision, which seemed to fly right in the face of the Schoppo decision and what is the majority opinion. And my understanding of that decision is that the ICA decided that because there was a new arbitrator appointed, that it would change the Schoppo approach. And I think Mr. Schulmeister and Nordic and LPI, and we agree that it doesn't track with the law, at least as everybody understood it, and quite frankly, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So I believe the first issue, as we look at it, is that the decision made by Judge Castagnetti in the first special proceeding was not final and would not be final until there was a final judgment entered in the matter. So I think, subject to Mr. Schulmeister seeing that differently, I think that's one we have uniformity on. The other one is a little bit more complicated in my mind, and I think it has to do with the questions that the court has raised and the idea of two special proceedings. I think the question to me is, what is the nature of the judgment that was entered on December 1, 2023 by Judge Tanaki and his order that preceded that, which confirmed the award? Mr. Schulmeister has stated, and I think we agree, that special proceeding, albeit a second different special proceeding, was the final award. It was the confirmation of it was the order confirming Judge Dan Foley's arbitration award, followed by the entry of judgment. So What is that? We believe it is exactly what I think has been argued here, and that is it was a continuation of the prior proceeding. It culminated in a final judgment. I don't believe the special proceeding was ever intended to culminate in a final judgment. I think the question which the court probably has on their mind is, why did LPI file a separate special proceeding? And quite frankly, I don't recall. My recollection is that Judge Crabtree was in transition or whatever, but whether it was inadvertence or whatever, it is what it is. And so we ended up with a second special proceeding, but that was the continuation following the direction of the first special proceeding, which ordered a re-arbitration with a new hearing. So it continued. The arbitration happened. And I know, Justice McKenna, this isn't the first time we've been in front of you on the Nordic and LBI case. This thing has been going on for decades, probably sadly. But I do think it's important, as we're looking at it, not just for this case, but I think the direction of future litigants and parties, where you have the culmination of a case in a special proceeding that results in a confirmation and then a final award, which I believe we all are saying it is final and as defined by the law, that there is no further, it ends the proceedings, leaving nothing further to be accomplished. That is what it is. So I think the issue, and I'll come back to the idea of whether there should be a remand on the cost order, but with respect to the more important question of the judgment, to me, and I believe it's consistent with law, that's a game, set, match. Nobody argued that because it wasn't in filed, at least my recollection is that because it was a special proceeding with a different number, that it really wasn't final or it didn't resolve all matters, such that the parties were then obligated to take whatever steps they needed to take, which could include filing an appeal, which could include seeking attorney's fees. I mean, there's a lot of very substantive issues that come out of the court's determination here of what is that final judgment. I think it raises the issue as well.
Mr. O'Toole, Justice
yes.
Has a question.
Yes.
So two things. I did want to ask you, since I did ask Mr. Schulmeister,
yes.
There's nothing that would have precluded you from filing the motion to confirm the second arbitration award in the original proceeding. That's certainly the case in this appeal, but there's nothing, I just want to make sure there's no procedural obstacle or anything like that you folks saw.
No, didn't see any procedural obstacle. And, you know, in all candor to the court, I quite frankly don't recall whether it was simply we filed and it got another number and we didn't pay attention to it. But no, there was no procedural obstacle. There was no reason why we couldn't. And I would just submit that that's the way it happened. Subject to Mr. Schulmeister telling me I'm wrong, I don't think anybody treated it, the second proceeding, as being aberrant or objected or moved to consolidate. So I think that's what it is. And then to me,
I do have Justice a second King, question, though, if I could.
Oh, sorry.
So the other thing that I did notice in the, you put it in your notice of appeal in this case, and certainly it's in the briefing, that when Judge Crabtree denied the motion for the interlocutory appeal, I mean, he gave voice to the idea that he even viewed the original order vacating the first arbitration and sending it back to arbitration as not final, and that
yes.
It would become final when a final judgment was entered.
Yes, correct.
Okay. So that's the understanding the parties were under based on what the circuit court had actually ruled upon with regards to your motion for interlocutory appeal.
Yes, I think that was clear. And Judge Crabtree gave it a lot of thought. I think he granted it orally, and then a year later he saw Madamba and he reversed his decision. So I hope I'm answering your question. Our understanding was when Judge Crabtree made his entered his order and denied our request for interlocutory appeal, and then we went forward, it was with the understanding that there would have to be ultimately a final judgment, at which time the parties, each party will have to do whatever they do when a final judgment happens, including, in our view, we believe we timely appealed from that. Have I answered your questions, Justice?
Thank you. I just want to make sure we have the procedural kind of, you know, background correct in this case. I mean, I think that matters in terms of analyzing the situation. Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. O'Toole, Justice Edens has a question.
Yes.
Do you have an issue with the case being remanded, the first special proceeding being remanded for final judgment, then shooting back up to the ICA for a decision consistent with its March memorandum opinion?
You know, I think we, even in our briefing, said that was an option. To me, if that relates to the cost order, if that is a way to clean it up, I would say, and maybe this is the result of reflecting on this and doing a lot more thinking between the time we filed and this morning, but I think that it doesn't affect the final judgment. I mean, if we're trying to deal with the cost order and clean that up because somehow the ICA was concerned about it, but I don't think it does anything with respect to the idea that there was a final judgment entered in December of 2023 that is the final judgment in the case, ending all proceedings. And that has different ramifications to me. And I would also, and I'm, if I haven't answered your question, I'll stop. I was going to move on a little bit here.
You did, and I have one further point on that. No, you're suggesting was all big one big thing: continuation, first and second arbitration, no big difference. And I think that's how the parties treated it. Do we then need, as Mr. Schulmeister says, to suggest that the cases should be then consolidated, especially now that there's probably going to be a cert application on the resolved appeals?
Yes. Quite frankly, you know, the honest answer is I don't know. I mean, I think that it's a bit of a mess right now, but I do believe if the court, in its decision here, reverses the ICA on the fact that it simply goes against what we all believe is the right law, but also is clear in its decision that there is a final judgment that was entered in a second special proceeding that for all intents and purposes and is final and binding and ends all proceedings, that's going to be really, really critical because it does determine what rights existed at the time the judgment was entered for both parties. And that includes whether, you know, there's a reference that Nordic has made to the right to attorney's fees. Well, that flows. If you have final judgment, you only have 14 days to be seeking attorney's fees, if in fact that judgment is the judgment that binds all parties and on all things. In terms of the consolidation, I think it's a bit of a mess. As Dave said, we got three things going on here. It would be good to get them all bundled up in one place. But I think that's a process issue as opposed to something substantive.
Mr. O'Toole, Justice Ginoza has a question.
You know, the question of entering a judgment on temporary remand, if it is just solely in this first proceeding, what comes to my mind is we're dealing with Chapter 658A, and 658A25 specifies when judgment should be entered for purposes of these type of arbitration proceedings. And if we are going to just stay within the confines of the first special proceeding, you know, none of the things that are listed in 658A25 occurred here. You know, there was no order confirming, there was no order vacating without directing a rehearing or modifying or correcting an award. So, I mean, I guess I wonder whether both may be appropriate, you know, sending it back down to have a final judgment in this case with recognition of and consolidating with the second special proceeding. And I'd like your comment on that if you see any particular, have any particular concerns with that.
I have a quick, thank you. I have 658A25 in front of me, and I've been looking at that for a couple of days. And I've reread it and reread it. Here would be my take of how that works. And particularly where to your question, there's a, there's two special proceedings. I don't think that anywhere in 658A25C or else anything else I've seen that talks about where that final judgment has to happen. I think it's super clear that the relief for attorney's fees and other costs can only be sought by the prevailing party upon the entry of an award and then a judgment, which we believe has happened here. That occurred. It didn't. It doesn't speak to whether it should have happened in one special proceeding or a second special proceeding. And so that's where we're left with here. I think we're a little bit, I don't mean you, but perhaps the parties are caught a little bit in the dilemma of, well, if we are going to all say that we have a final judgment entered by Judge Tanaki, then I don't know what else it could be. It's a final judgment. And I would read 658A25C to say that has occurred. That has occurred, and whatever then the parties needed to do with the entry of that judgment, they needed to do, and I'll stop there.
So then, what I'm hearing then from you is really, I mean, the recognition of the final judgment in the second proceeding.
Yes.
Can that not simply happen by a remand to consolidate the two proceedings in the circuit court? What's the problem with that approach, if any?
I don't know that there's any problem with it. I think the point that I was addressing, and I'm not sure it's the question you're asking, is if we do those things and we consolidate, ultimately we're left with a question of what is the effect of the final judgment that was entered in the second special proceeding? Is that final for all purposes? Is it, as Mr. Schulmeister has argued, and we would agree, a continuation of a proceeding that started back in 2010 and it had some bumps and turns and we ended up finally with a judgment? And then I think the other thing I would say is just procedurally, because I think the SP, the special proceeding issue, is maybe driving a lot of this, but under HRCP Rule 81, you know, it special proceeding is not guided by any of the Hawaii rules of civil procedure. It seems to be more or less a technicality. I don't know what that animal really is, but I don't think it's an animal that suggests there's two different cases here. What we have is one case that's been a continuation that ends up in a judgment. And that to me is what we would think is very important to have clarity on. If consolidation is appropriate here, to bundle this up and clean it up, fine. If for the purpose of the cost order, as you've asked and Justice Edens has asked, would be better to do a remand. But the question in my mind is there a final judgment that should issue in the first SP? I don't think so. I really don't. I'm just...
Mr. O'Toole, it seems...
Yes.
I hear you saying that you think that this court should treat the final judgment in the second SP as the final judgment that set the deadline for Mr. Schulmeister to file a motion for attorney's fees within 14 days. It seems to me that because your client filed the second special proceeding, it seems that that's somewhat unfair under the circumstances. And I also think about what if, can't imagine this really happening, but what if the bond company had some issue and wanted to intervene and do something about the bond? You're basically taking the position that they would be also be precluded from taking any position to do anything because the final judgment in the second special proceeding might have set some deadlines of which they weren't even aware. You know, I mean, they're not really interested in the underlying arbitration. They're only interested in the bond that they issued, and there's some issue with respect to that. So it seems to me that I understand your position. You're zealously arguing on behalf of your client, but it seems to me that candidly, you created the issue by filing a separate second special proceeding, and it seems like what you are advocating would be really unfair to Nordic. Would you like to respond to that?
Well, I think I would just, I think that a lot of this cries out for clarity. I mean, it's certainly dealing with issue number one, which we, I think the parties agree needs to be addressed and reversed. But I think 658A25C also would be helpful to have clarity on, because I think we read it one way. I think that the court, and or at least some of the justices and judges, may read it a different way. And I want to address the bond issue, because I think that when the bond kind of rises or falls on whether if Nordic doesn't have a claim, then that bond is gone. So I think that's a little different, but understand. I have no further argument unless there's further questions.
There does not appear to be any further questions. Mr. Schulmeister, any rebuttal?
No, I think that this has been adequately vetted from Nordic's point of view.
All right, then thank you so much to both counsel. Thank you very much to our substitute justices, Judges Kirsten Hammond and Stephen Nichols. And at this point, this matter is concluded, and the court takes this matter under advisement. Aloha.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ua ho'oku'u ia mai ne kea aha ho'okolokolo ki'iki hanahano o ka moku'ana hoi. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned.